Well, I'm Mae Martin. My name is Mae Martin, and I was born Mary Pierce. Is it registered? In South Africa, near Cape Town. And we came back to Canada when I was not quite a year old. And I lived in the Maritimes until late in the 20s. Now let's see.
When did you start to work?
Well,
why did you look for work?
Well, it was a matter of a large family, and I was the oldest, and oldest of 10. When I was 16, I felt it necessary to get out and help support myself, and well, mostly support myself.
Had you been going to school then?
Yes. And I left school at the end of grade 9. I had spent that year with my grandmother in Truro, Nova Scotia, and went to the academy there. I was sorry to leave school because I was very interested in learning, and in the back of my mind, when I went to work, the idea was that I would get to the point where I could go back to school again and go on to higher training, education. I wanted to get into physics eventually, but and later on, I decided to go in for training as a nurse and use that as a stepping stone to get on. However, that never happened. In the meantime, I met my first husband. But I worked mostly as a first in a store and in a grocery store, and then I went into hotel work and waitress at first mostly, and it.
Was this before the Depression? Or?
This is in the 20s, getting on in the late 20s. Now wait a minute, I'm a little bit mixed. No, in the waitress work was in the 30s, because it was at the end. It was in 28 that I went to the States first, and this was, as I told you, that I entered illegally in the sense that I couldn't get my visa, or I had to wait 2 years for a visa from South Africa. But in the meantime, I went in on a permit, and from 6 months, and then extended to a year. Then I came home and back again. And when I went to extend it for another 6 months, that were getting into 1930 then, and they didn't want any unnecessary people in the country. The jobs were getting fewer. So, so it was rather interesting when I had to come back. I received these forms to be filled out and sworn to before a notary of the public, and of course in that it came out that I was working. So I had 24 hours notice to leave the country, or as they put it, be liable to possible arrest and deportation. And I had to catch I was in Naugatuck, Waterbury, Naugatuck near Waterbury in Connecticut, and I had to get an early morning train. So my friend who went to the train with me and I, we stood on the station and watched one of the first of the electric trains. I just watched it come in. It was early in the morning, so it was loaded with workers, and it was interesting. And then when I went to the station master after it had gone out, he said, "Well, that's your train. Just went out." That was a train? Anyway, cut a long story short, I got a taxi to take me to, I can't think of the name of the town now, where I had to make connections with the train from New York to get back to Boston. and charged me $15, and I thought it was reasonable enough, even for then. Well, he could have charged me $25. He could have asked anything. I had to get that train. And as we came, went over a mountain, went down, we had to go over this, I don't remember the name of the mountain now, but I was very, I was sitting on pins and needles in the back of the car, because he was going so slowly. And we only had, it was an hour's run by train, and we had about that much time. By the time I got the, we had less than the hour, actually, by the time I got the taxi. And when we got to the bottom, here was a huge, what was then a huge transport, turned over in the field, and merchandise all over the place. And he turned around, he said, well, he said, that guy came down the mountain too fast. So I thought, well, even if I don't make the train, I'm alive. We got into the city. I still can't think of the name. With 10 minutes to spare. Got into Boston. So yeah, as we were told, the boat would leave Boston 1 o'clock, but this train would get me in Boston before 1 o'clock. And as I left the train in Boston, I bumped into a girlfriend I'd gone to school with from home, returning back too. So we go on to the shipping office, and as we're about to board the boat, we're asked our names. She had to spell her name, and mine was simple, Mary Pierce. But I really got once over. They had the documents there. They were watching for me, making sure that I would get that boat. And incidentally, this was when I found out that they were on the summer schedule already, and the boat didn't leave till 5 o'clock, and I didn't need to have had that taxi. So then, this was in March, and I decided, and then it was then that I had ideas of taking a training for a nurse, and to use that as a stepping stone to get on into further studies. I wanted to get into research chemistry. That's what I really wanted to get into. And I had gone to night school while I was in Waterbury, and taken chemistry. I had a year and a half at night school there. And because I had, well, that's what I wanted to do. However, so when I went back to the to speak to the principal at school, he had known me. He had been there just that. Incidentally, this was six years, less a few months from the time I had left school, and B.C. Silver. I was the principal the last year I was there, and he was a very, very progressive person for those days, and he had lots of things going on in that school that now are taken for granted in schools. He had the first orchestra, and school orchestra, and it broadcast over the radio station from Halifax, and, you know, and sports, and all the things that we now take for granted in the schools. And another thing they had there, they used to have at Christmas time, a concert. The three high school grades would compete. They would more or less, they were plagiarized, I suppose, but more or less create our own show. And I can show you a picture in that. It's just 50 years old. And of our group winning that year the high school trophy, well, I've forgotten what it was. We had quite a lot of good singers in our group, so we had an operetta. But what he had suggested, I had thought I would review grade 9 in a couple of months, or 3 months, and then the next year, take grade 10, which was sufficient in those days for entry into a hospital. But he knew, he was aware of my record, and he suggested that if I dropped the languages, I could take the other subjects, the major subjects, while they reviewed for the grade 10, and then be able to complete high school the following year and in the period, which is what I did. And that was one of the most interesting times of my life, was to go back to school like that, and 6 years after I was...
Were you older than most of the people?
Well, I would be, you see, 6 and 7 years older than, and many of them were younger brothers or sisters of those with whom I had gone to school. So I found that very interesting, and I could help them with some things that, for instance, the chemistry, and other things that bothered me a bit, they would help me. And I was rather happy and proud, I think, when they nominated me valedictorian of the class when we graduated. And we were in, this was in Wolfville in Nova Scotia, in the university town, Acadia University. And this was another thing. B.C. Silver had arranged that we had the use of many of the facilities at the university, including the use of their auditorium for our graduation exercises. And I worked the summer between, and then after I graduated, I went to work. This was when I went into hotel work, and I, of course, went to a summer hotel where I would do very well in tips, and then in the winter time, I went to Halifax and worked in a restaurant or a hotel there, and there, this is where the hours. We worked 7 days a week. We worked any hours they wanted us to work, split up any way they wanted to. And if they only needed us a couple of hours, which sometimes happened, well, that was it. But in the hotel, most of your hours were, you put your full hours in. And you made enough to get by on. And it was the summer job that sort of kept going, and after the summer job I could go home for a couple of weeks and have a little time off. But I didn't seem to be getting any nearer my objective. I put my name into the VG hospital in Halifax, and I was accepted. I was waiting for the call. And then at the last hotel I worked in Kentville, Nova Scotia, I met the chap who became my husband. And we went down to Halifax, but after the summer was over, it didn't work out there, so I took the train for Montreal, and he hitchhiked. This is what, 32? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
So you decided not to.
32, 33. Decided not to go to school. And then, Chris, in Montreal, I remember through the 30s and into the beginning of the war years when family men worked for 20 and 25 cents an hour. And we were getting, in a restaurant I worked in, we were getting big money when we got 20 cents an hour and 25 cents off for any meals we had. And again, this was where we did have a day off there in Montreal. When it suited them, we could be called in, of course. But anyway.
And the restaurants were completely unorganized.
Completely unorganized. I hadn't come in contact with organization. I realized afterwards that I had met people who were in the the big activity there at that time, the trade union, particularly affecting women, was in the needle trades. Yes. And I didn't quite understand it, but of course subject to the way things are reported then in the papers. We were beginning to get radio then too, and but I left Montreal. Of course, I'm leaving out various. I had been back down to Nova Scotia in the meantime, and then up to Montreal again. And then when we came back, we went on to Toronto.
That's still during the Depression.
And still, no, I didn't come in contact with the trade union movement there. I was a little more aware of it because they were organized in the beer parlors, and though Toronto at that time that must have been in Montreal I came in contact with that, because in Toronto at that time they had no beer parlors. They had prohibition in Toronto. You know, it was a matter of a choice. A city could vote. It used to be called Toronto the Good. not that a drink of beer wasn't available, but and it seems a little strange after Montreal, because at that time Montreal was comparatively wide open. And, beer parlors, and you could buy a bottle of beer at the corner store.
Did you work mostly in English-speaking milieu in Montreal?
Yes, yes. And here's just a little something that's always bothered me, in a sense that we were taught I had 1 year of French, the year I was in grade 9, and the class was divided in two, and it was about a man and wife who taught French. Well, in one they spoke French, I was in the class we didn't speak French. We learned to write it and so on, which was a pity. But the thing I regret is that it was drummed into our heads that what we were learning was Parisian French, and that what they spoke in Montreal in Quebec, I forget what they called it, but it wasn't supposed to be French. And
wow.
It was a pity, because what it did, it made me... I was in Montreal for about 3 or 4 years, 3 years anyway, and I would not learn to speak French there. I had every opportunity because while I worked in predominantly English-speaking area, still there were French people, and I liked the people very, very much, but I wouldn't learn to speak it. And it wasn't until many years later that I realized, and was very, very sorry. I can read a bit French, but it would have been so much better had I learned to speak it as they speak it. But
then you went to Toronto.
Then Toronto, I rather liked it there, and. Then we were going to, then my husband and I were going to go to the States, and we couldn't get across the line. They wouldn't let us through.
Why? Why is that?
We didn't have a visa. We couldn't get it, and I guess they. Oh, we decided to go across independently, separately, so we would be tied together, and we were just going to visit. But I believe they had somebody on the bus. Anyway, they tied us together. And I can remember them putting us in a room, having spoken to us separately, and then they put us in a room and left us there for a while, and Ted started to say something. This was Ted Ansel, and I have done, shh, the place might, we would say bug today, but... Because I was going to fight it right to the last. Finally, they had some kind of a court they held there, and asked us questions. And I tried to stick it out. I wanted to get across. Finally, I laughed at them. And we were barred from entering the States for a year.
Was it because of like the previous experience?
No. This was just a general. They didn't want people in the country. It's still in the 30s, you see, and the job situation is bad, and they just didn't want any extra people there in their labor force.
Did your husband work?
Yes, he worked in the restaurants, the hotels rather too.
Oh, was he a bartender?
No, he wasn't a bartender, but he worked in a club in Montreal. That's a long time ago, and I don't quite remember what was all about.
Did he feel all right about you working?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I mean, it was a matter of necessity in those days. Either you stuck at home with nothing, or I guess I was a bit... I wasn't content to do that anyway, and I had, I suppose I was... What's the word? I don't know, progressive, but exactly, but a little bit ahead of my time, and independent is all get out.
What kind of attitudes were there in the 30s towards women working generally? Like, did you ever run into stuff where people would say women shouldn't work if they're taking jobs from men?
You did to some extent, but there weren't that many women working, except in certain... Like in the needlecraft, in restaurants and hotels, and it was still limited where jobs for women, definitely. Mm-hmm. And there was always a man superior to you, like the head waiter or. If there was a hostess under him, she was, you know, just no more than you were.
Yeah.
And and little, like, remember quitting when I quit a job in, because subsequently I went, we stayed in Windsor, because that was where we had tried to cross the line. We stayed there, and I got a job at the hotel there. It was easy. There were more jobs, it seemed, for women in those days, or easier for a woman to get a job in these certain trades. I mean, whereas at another time they might have waiters, at that time they would take a woman because they paid her less. She might be doing the same work as a man beside her, or a man had done, but they paid her less. And so we stayed in Windsor for a couple of years, and the war broke out while we were in Windsor, and that would be, what, 39?
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was, no, I think we stayed there until 41, something like that. And then we decided to come out to the coast because Ted had originally been out here and told me all about it and so fine. I'm venturesome. I want to come out and see it too. And we had an old Model A, I think it was. Pickup truck. We started out with that, and I've forgotten how much money we had, whether it was something like $60, which was a tremendous amount, and to come across Canada, come to the coast. We got to Calgary. In the meantime, of course, we had some trouble. Something, we'd had the car checked before we left Windsor, but incidentally, we were back in Toronto. Then I'd forgotten. We'd been a little change, shifting around there, I won't go into, but we'd left in Toronto, actually. Oh, that was it. We had gone down. After the war started, we'd gone back down to Nova Scotia, and we didn't like it there. Oh, Halifax was being the port of entry, of exit, and so on. We didn't like it there at all, and so we came back up to Toronto. And it was from Toronto we came out here. But we when we'd had the car checked over, and they put something in backwards, I've forgotten what it was now, which gave us some trouble and took most of our money on the way. Well, by the time we got to Calgary, we had, I think, something like 55 cents in our pocket and the car. But by this time, that type of car was very much in demand on the prairies, and we sold it actually for more than we paid for it. We'd paid 65 or something like that for it, and we sold it for 100. And then we thumped our way the rest of the way to Vancouver. Landed here in a downpour. This is Vancouver. However, then the thing was to look forward. Of course, now we're getting on into the war years, and there's more jobs for everybody. And I went to work in a restaurant. And the first restaurant, I didn't like it because there were too many bosses, and I quit and went to another restaurant. I can't remember the name of it now. It was down near Hastings, just above Hastings. Anyway, when I applied for the job, this struck me a little bit funny, the way he asked me my credentials and so on, and what I had done, which was fine. I qualified for the job. Then he said, and we bargained on how much I would get, and I've forgotten how much that was now, but much more than we got paid in the East, that's for sure. But he said, now, if you keep your eyes open and your mouth shut, he said, I'm sure we'll get along fine. And I thought, what is all this about? And I worked there a few weeks, and there seemed to be a lot of discord and discontent. And afterwards, I realized that he fermented a lot of it, that he deliberately, to make mostly women, make them quit. And finally, I realized that these girls belonged to the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union. And he was a new employer. He had just bought the business. And he wanted to get the union out of there. And this was what was behind what he said to me and why he tried to get those girls out. Well, when I realized what was going on, I talked to the cashier, with whom I'd become rather friendly, and told her that, and I knew very little about trade unionism, but I certainly didn't agree with what was going on there, and I didn't like what he was doing, and he could take his job and stick it. Well, she said, I'll go with you. So we quit. And I went right from there. I asked, found out where the Union Hall was. I went up to the Union Hall. Barbara Stewart was I've forgotten whether she was actually a business agent. I think she was. It seemed to me there was a man there then, too. Anyway, Barbara Stewart was on the executive, but there was a man who was business agent. I can't remember his name. And I told him, I said, I want a job in a union house, and you get me a job in the union house, I want to join the union. I explained what had happened there, and I couldn't understand, and as time went on, I realized that they had been remiss in, that the union had been remiss in letting this happen there.
Instead of finding everybody else.
Yes. And, I mean, they should have put a picket on the place rather than, of course, I didn't at that time. Didn't. However, that was the beginning of my work in the hotel and restaurant union. I went till about 40. I think it was 44, I went north to the Yukon, to Whitehorse, to work. And,
1941?
Hmm? After,
around
41
or
42
to
44,
or did you go for 2 years to the Yukon, or? No, it was
only another one winter, actually. So, it must have been about 42. I'm not quite sure of the years then, but I went up there and I organized the first restaurant workers that were organized in the Yukon, in Whitehorse. I don't know how they the organization went on after that, but
how did you become pro-union in terms of the kind of attitudes that you brought into that kind of situation? You must have on some level been at least open to trade unionism. Or was it watching this employer abuse?
Well, this was just the final. And having worked under the different conditions across Canada and being an independent person, not wanting to be shoved around, I didn't like to see anyone else shoved around either. And it was, then as I looked back, I realized that most of, as I had seen, what was good in the labor movement was there because of the organization. And I didn't blame the union per se for what this man did. I blamed individuals in the union for not stopping him from doing that. And after being up in the Yukon just for a long winter, I came back down again, and I'm still a member of the union. And when the next elections, I was elected business agent. And this was in the still around 44. And, or 44 or 45, possibly. Because, and we, of course, we proceeded to Emily Watts. Did you have come across her name?
Yeah, I just got a letter from her today.
Oh, did you?
I'll let you read it.
Oh, I would be delighted. I was going to give you her address if you hadn't contact. She was president, and we hired another young fellow as organizer, and we worked in conjunction with the beer parlor union, I've forgotten what they called them then. Because now, as you know, it's amalgamated into one great union, one large union. And I was in favor of the industrial type of organization, rather than the individual trades. But at that time, of course, that was the
Trades and Labor Council?
We belonged to the Trades and Labor Council here and the Congress, but what was it, the AFL? We were AFL, which were mostly organized mostly in, according to trades.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's great big changes now. So we not only had to sometimes fight the employer, but we often had to fight the hierarchy of the union across the line. The headquarters was across the line. And we, during that last year, the last year of the war and just following, during that period, we organized, we negotiated what was, and had signed what was then recognized as the best agreement, hotel, you know, workers, hotel and restaurant workers agreement in Canada. We had gotten it signed by the majority of the restaurant employers, and we were in the process of organizing in the hotels.
Were you organizing the entire hotel?
Now the beer parlors, remember, are they're organized under the what did they call them? The beer parlors, the
Beverage Dispensers Union.
Yes, yes, they. And but then they gave us a great deal of help too. That in 1940, see, the war ended in 1945, didn't it? And in 1946, quite early in the year, late in the spring, actually, we had the first international convention at Milwaukee. There hadn't been one held during the war. None of the trade unions held international conventions during the war. And I was one of the first. And things happened there that weren't completely understood, even by the trade union movement, because it was like in our union, the first remember that during the war, workers had it not too badly, because they were needed. But once the war was over, they didn't need all these workers. Then there were all the men and some women who returned from the forces, looking for jobs. So the employers could have it their own way again, and they wanted to tear down some of the things, many of the things that we had won during the war years. For instance, one of the things we accomplished in the hotel and restaurant workers was a new and better minimum wage for women and hours of work regulation, so that and I don't know whether this is still in force or not, but it was, if a girl couldn't work after, I had forgotten whether it was 12 or 1, and be let out from work after 12 or 1, whichever it was, without means of transportation home. She could work all night until sometime in the morning,
mm-hmm.
but she couldn't be let out in those wee hours of the through the night onto the streets. There had been a girl attacked and killed at that time, and we used that too. Anyway, we had this legislation.
Hey, can I just go back and ask some questions?
Mm-hmm.
When you established the minimum wage for women, was that in the entire industry, and that was that partly because of the union organization that the government was forced to do that? So,
yes.
Was that done through the minimum wage board, or?
I have just forgotten the mechanics of it now, just how it all worked, but, and we didn't do it completely by ourselves. We spearheaded the movement, and there were other women in the other union, like from the Fishermen's Union, for instance. There were women, a lot of women there, and so that we had the support of the Trades and Labor Council and so on.
In establishing a new minimum wage for all females.
Yes.
Okay. Another step. Could you describe your experience organizing in the Yukon? Could you, like, tell that story of what it was like?
It's a little bit hazy in my mind. I remember more some of the conditions of living up there. And, for instance, when I went up there, we were fortunate in that we had a house to go to live in. We went to work in a laundry, and the house had belonged to the man who owned the laundry, and they had moved somewhere else, and so he let women who worked in the laundry live in that house. Otherwise, we saw some places where they were about 6 by 10 or 10 by 10, what would you call them? Cabins, I guess. And some of them a little bit larger, and sometimes with one and two in them. And they didn't, remember this is the Yukon, but they had very little in the way of heat. and the hours, of course, they were much like it was had been in the East, was that they worked any hours that the employer wanted. Mainly, we were the wages were good because we remember this is the Yukon, and the wages were much higher than anywhere else. And of course, correspondingly, the cost of living was much higher. But it was the, as I say, the hours of work, the conditions of living that we were mostly concerned in. The pity of it was that I didn't stay long enough to carry on the work. However, it was carried on by others. And
so, did you like go in there and sign people off?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes.
And was there any legislation at that time that was a legal process of certification? Yes.
No. No. That's right. That's right. Now, see, it was much the same here as far as that goes. And, a lot of the trade union movement as a whole have been responsible for much legislation that's been put on the books to, you know, to help the workers. And, of course, in times of depression and times like we're coming into now, that the employers try to break it down again, right? take these things away from the workers, again, to want to make the workers, get the workers in their control. It's, this I had recognized, many years before, that it was the worker against the employer that you, and it, you didn't, and it was when I got to Vancouver that I realized you had a much better chance standing side by side with other workers than you had fighting on your own.
Mm-hmm.